The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Welcome into At the Podium. This is episode 14.5, brought to you by the fine folks at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. Two pressers on the docket today. First up is defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz, who not only has to explain the loss and what happened to the Dallas Cowboys, but he also has the Los Angeles Rams high-powered offense to deal with coming up next on the schedule. And then next up in these press conferences is offensive coordinator Mike Groh, who is getting a lot of heat, and that heat, in my opinion, is well-deserved. The offense is stale, lacks fresh ideas, the necessary adjustments that either come too late in the game or never come, and the results have been incredibly poor, especially when compared to last year. In fact, Brandon Lee Gauton, may he forever reign, wanted to chime in on this, and his message on this topic was, quote, grow TFO, unquote. Pretty sure you can decipher what that means, and I'm with him. It's time for a change. So you may not have heard that John DeFilippo has been let go from the Minnesota Vikings as offensive coordinator. Many are calling for the Eagles to bring him back. It's hard to see that when he wants to call plays, and he can definitely get a play-calling gig at offensive coordinator elsewhere. But I would also be less surprised if they brought him on this year right now in an advisory role. But who knows? It's a situation worth monitoring, and we'll track it, of course. All right, time to hear it from the men themselves. Jim Schwartz up first, then Mike Groh. Let's kick it over to these press conferences right now.
Make sure his confidence stays high after a play like that.
You know, he felt such a responsibility. And, you know, that's what's good about players that feel that responsibility. You need to have a short memory for a corner, but, you know, there's no other plays after that. You know, I think I really don't worry too much about Russell. That's one of the things he's good at is putting some stuff behind him and moving on to the next one. It's just tough when, I mean, you're moving on to getting on the bus. You know what I mean? So, but again, I've been very impressed with the way he's battled through some tough spots this year and has been there for us. And I think he'll continue on the right track.
You guys visibly upset. You know, understandably visibly upset after that play. What did you need to say to him in that moment?
That's just one play in that game, and I mean that's the way every game goes. You know, I mean, guy drills a long field goal first play of the game. We get a takeaway, and sort of, you know, through a technicality, we don't get the takeaway, and. You know, just so many different plays within a game that you can point to every single one of those as, you know, the turning point of the game. Those guys know that. I mean, he took it tough. I think if you have a camera on just about any player at that point, they all would have looked the same. You know, it's a gut punch, and, you know, it's life in the NFL. We need to bounce back from it. It was tough. It was tough way to finish a very important game.
Said he was still battling that hamstring, kind of going in and out. How tough is it to balance whether you put them in a game or you want to get them out of there, and how many players you have available?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is that is what it is. I mean, he was going good early in that game. Another guy made some good tackles for us and had a big PBU. Then he started feeling a little bit. Trainers took him in. And then after the half, they thought that he'd be ready to go again. He was out and made a couple nice plays for us. But then it was pretty obvious that he wasn't running the way that he could. I don't think on the touchdown that was the issue. I think he was in good position and just the guy made a great throw and he didn't really finish it. But you could really tell on the next one, the guy sort of ran right past him and Sid was off. And it was obvious then that he couldn't run well enough to do his job. So we had to take him back out again. But like all our other players, he's game and he's out there battling. He's trying to do whatever he can to help the team. He knows the position we're in with our corners and he's trying his very best. But it's up to us at times to be able to say, okay, that's, let's call it a day. And that's what we had to do late in that game.
Yeah, he's a hard guy to kind of evaluate and project because he came in with a lot of expectations but has been dealing with a good amount of injuries. I'm just curious how you look at him.
Well, you look at him like he's a young player that's had to battle through a lot of injuries. I mean, last year, you got to take last year out of the equation because that we knew going in what we were going to get. So you really can't – we bought that issue. So we certainly don't, hold that against him in any kind of way. But there's a lot of players that, experience injuries early in their career, late in their career. The hardest time to experience injuries is when you're new to a team. You're assigned free agent, and that guy goes and gets hurt because the spotlight's on you. You're a high draft pick and you get hurt. I think you guys probably have a lot of those situations here. A guy comes in. Drafted high and everybody's expecting him to come in and be a key contributor and he's just not able to for whatever reason. And we put Sid in that category. He's done some really good things for us this year, playing the nickel early in the season. I thought he by this time he was really going to there was some on the job training, but by this time I really thought that he would have really taken off, but, got injured, wasn't able to do it, then had to move outside with our injuries. It's not just his injury, it's the other guys, too. He hadn't really been able to play the same position. So we'll be patient with it. He's working as hard as he can to contribute to the team. We know that.
Jim, Jalen Mills out on the sideline. Even though he's injured, in the situation you guys are in, a cornerback, how much is his leadership in games and his personality important on that sideline?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that that he brings to us, as he brings that competitiveness. And he's a really good teammate. It's not just with the defensive guys. He's a really good teammate for the offensive guys. He's always talking to the gunners and the vice guys when they come off the field. Jalen's obviously not going to come back for us this year. But he's finding a way to contribute regardless of that, and we're all thankful for that.
Jim, we talked a few weeks ago about I think it was the Giants and how they come out of the huddle with tempo, speed. I don't think a team does it as well as the Rams. What does that do to a defense, and does that affect personnel too? It's different type of tempo because if a team goes no huddle, that.
I think I know where you're going. The Rams don't substitute very often. They stay in 11 personnel pretty much the entire game. The games that we have in our breakdown, it's like 99%. Even in short yardage and goal line, they're in the same personnel group. And they also don't have a lot of situational subs where they use different tight ends a little bit using 81 and 89. Or switching a different wide receiver in, they pretty much stay with the guys that are in there and play that. So with that way, it does make it a little bit more difficult to sub. We're going to have to be surgical with our substitutes, particularly on third down. We like to roll our defensive line. Haven't been able to do that as much as we have in the past. But anytime you're going sub, you got to hurry on, hurry off. And then also you got to be able to communicate quick. They turn around and break the huddle and snap the ball. You got everybody's got to be on the same page when it happened. They did it a little bit last year. They've taken it to a different level this year, and we've seen it for some different teams. The Giants, the Saints did it an awful lot. We didn't react very well to it against the Saints. That had to do with a lot of the big plays we gave up in that game. But, you know, we have a little bit more experience with it now, and some of our players have gained a little bit more experience that hadn't seen it before, young players that are playing. So we have to do a better job. That's one of the keys. I mean, you have Gurley, and you have Goff, and you have Cooks, and, you know, just keep them coming. There's a lot of really good players over there. But what they do tempo-wise is every bit as much a challenge as their talent that they put on the field.
What is it about their scheme or the way they operate that allows them to be so productive despite, you know, just sticking with that same personnel grouping?
Well, it's not just one. Well, all their guys are sort of interchangeable. They can use their tight ends as wide receivers. You'll see their wide receivers line up and block sort of like tight ends would. You'll see them close to the offensive tackle. They'll stay. Not many teams you see wide receivers stay in the protection and protect. The Rams do. So even though they're in one personnel group, it really plays like four different personnel groups for them because of the interchangeable. You know, all their tight ends can be a wide out. Most of their wide outs can be a tight end. The running back can be a wide receiver. He can be a running back. And he can also line up in some tight end positions and some of their empty stuff. So, you know, to say they stay in one personnel group, yeah, the jersey numbers stay the same, but the way they're using them, you know, I mean, you guys know how much we value multidimensional players on defense, and it gives you the ability to, you know, to be able to play a lot of different ways. Well, they're sort of the offensive counterpoint to that.
Does the way they operate in any way, does it make it more important to sort of mask what you're doing defensively till later in the clock? A lot is made of McVay being in Goff's ear until the communication cuts off.
Yeah, last year they were probably doing a little bit more of that than this year. They've counterbalanced that. I don't know what the best way to say. They've sort of complemented that with the quick operation. So, I mean, they come out of the huddle and that ball snapped when, I mean, everybody is set for a millisecond and that ball is snapped. So if you're worried about disguising and you're not going to be in position to play to play. So there's the combination of both of those things that you have to balance.
What have you seen in the last 2 weeks, Detroit and Chicago, that offense, the Rams offense?
You know, each one's a little bit different. The both games are on the road and we're not playing them here. We're going to Los Angeles. So I think that was one thing. I think, you know, you can tell how much good pressure can change things. I think that was probably the biggest thing that came out of the Bears game. Khalil Mack was a bit of a wrecking crew out there. We have guys that can do that. We have guys that can get around the quarterback. And, you know, they also did a good job of limiting the big plays. That's a team that's made a lot of explosive plays down the field. And I thought that Chicago in particular did that. And I think in both games you saw takeaways. You know, that's a pretty good formula to play in those good. Get some pressure on the quarterback. Doesn't necessarily have to be blitz. Chicago didn't blitz a whole lot. You know, limit the big plays. Get some turnovers. Yeah, check.
One of those guys that has been kind of record in the backfield has been Michael Bennett. He's been playing even more snaps. How at this age is he able to reduce it to slow?
Yeah, and he's been battling some injury situations. I mean, it's all hands on deck. I mean, you know, you have to do it. But you know, he's very, very productive rushing the passer, and he's been active and made some big plays. The play he made on the first series on the zone read, that's a tough play to make. You know, they're faking that they're handing the ball off, and he's got to be able to tackle that guy. And then the quarterback pulls it. He's got to be able to tackle that guy. But that might have saved us 4 points in that situation because they were driving. All of a sudden, it put them, you know, second and long, and we were able to get that stop. So we need more of that. We need more of that from all our guys. You're right. We haven't been able to sub as much as we'd like up front. We'd have 4 and even 5-man rotation at times last year. You know, Josh Sweat left that game with an injury. We were down to 3, and those guys are playing tackle positions also. Timmy Jernigan wasn't able to play. So, you know, those guys have had to take a heavier load.
What's it like going up against McVay? What, you know, what makes him good or a challenge?
Well, I think it sort of falls to the other stuff we talked about. You know, the tempo is a bit of a challenge. Interchangeable players, you know, and then one of the biggest things is, you know, they can run the ball really well. Gurley, there's a lot of different ways that they can use him, and then their run sets up those deep passes, and they put a lot of pressure on deep on the field. So they just challenge you, you know, every different level. You have to, if you don't play the run very well, you're not going to beat them. If you don't play the deep balls very well, you're not going to beat them. You don't play the screen well, you're not going to beat them. If you don't handle tempo well, a lot of different tempos, you're not going to beat them. If you miscommunicate, you're going to look bad. You know, all those things go hand in hand.
What kind of season is Fletcher Cox having? 6-7. Is he having a 6-7 season?
That's what our record is. So that's on everybody. But he's a very productive player for us. He's one of the best players in the league. You know, but when it's all said and done, that's what our record is. And I think Fletch would probably tell you the same. I mean, even if you have a great game and get a couple sacks, and he had one of them taken away with an accepted penalty. You know, trying to get a team out of field goal range, that's tough for a defensive player too. I mean, but it's all about the scoreboard. It's all about getting wins, and we're not satisfied with any statistic or any individual play when we don't come out with a win.
But it sounded like earlier you referenced that opening kickoff that everybody's talking about. And I know it's not a defensive thing, but what did you think of that play and the officiating as a whole in that game?
Well, officiating's not my place. But, you know, you have to understand how it happened. It's a tight play, and the ball comes out, and the officials didn't rule fumble on the field. So it goes to replay, and then they see that it was a fumble, but then they need to see clear recovery. And even though it was pretty obvious that we had the ball, you couldn't see that clear recovery on the thing from what I understand. I mean, it's unfortunate because we did get the ball out, we did recover it, but you know, doesn't always mean that you get the call. And you know, you just have to understand, like if they had called it a fumble on the field, obviously we got the ball and we would have got it. But I mean, that's a tight call when those guys are all spread out for a kickoff. You don't get officials as close to the play as they do on an offensive play. There's a lot of things that went into it. I'd say certainly would have been nice to steal an extra possession, put the offense in position right there. We didn't get it. There's half a dozen other plays that maybe something happened. Maybe they, you know, maybe they missed a call here, or, you know, a ball bounced this way instead of another way, or, you know, a defender tips a ball and looks like we're going to knock it down and ball bounces right to their guy's football. I mean, you know, we have plenty of other plays to be able to make those plays. We can't point to that play as, you know, the play of the game. It was just one of the plays of the game.
The Vikings have let John DeFilippo go. Having been in the building with him and coached against him this year, what do you make of him as a coach?
I didn't know that. I mean, it's a bummer for me anytime coaches get let go, but that sort of, yeah. Okay.
So Golden Tate only played, I think, 20 snaps this week. I mean, what's the reasoning for that, especially after the way he played the week before, and he was pretty heavily involved the week before?
Yeah, he obviously Golden's a really good player, and you know, he can do a lot of things for our offense. And we played probably a little bit more 12 personnel in this game. I liked our matchup with our two tight ends on the field, and obviously then there's only two wideouts in the game.
He's been really productive when he has been targeted. What have been the issues of not getting him more involved this season?
Well, we got a lot of guys we're trying to get involved, Jeff. So, I mean, there's only one ball, you know, but you're right. I mean, Dallas is making a lot of really good plays, and we're trying to create new ways each and every week to make sure that he is, to ensure that he's getting some touches in the game, because he's been really productive when he's been able to get his hands on the ball.
Anything just like it's tough with two tight ends and especially two tight ends that maybe have some similar skill sets.
I didn't hear the first part of
having two tight ends. Is that one of the reasons?
No, it's not tough with two tight ends. It's just there's, you know, there's only one ball. So we can only get it to one guy at a time. And look, we think that Dallas is going to be a really good football player for a long time. We're really glad that we have him on our team. You know, he's somebody that people are going to have to deal with certainly each and every week going forward. And, you know, to pair him with Zach and Alshon and Nelly and Golden and those guys, I mean, you know, we got good skill. But like I said, there's only one ball, so can only go one place on each play.
And so, Mike, how do you navigate this going forward here in these next three games when you want to get Goddard on the field, like you said? But to have him on, you got to take someone off, and that's Golden Tate when you're in 12. How do you navigate that?
Well, I mean, it's just a balance, you know. It's just trying to find the right balance and try to get those guys in the right position so that, you know, they can make the plays that we need to help us win. But that changes each and every week. I mean, we try to play the game that we think that we need to play that week against a defense that we're facing. And so every week will be a little bit different in that regard.
I guess Washington, it seemed that moving Carson around, getting him out of the pocket was really a productive way to get him settled and going. You didn't do any of that against Dallas. Was that something different with their defense? Or
yeah, again, from a schematic standpoint, you're trying to exploit areas that you feel like you know, a defense may be less efficient than others. And in some cases in the Washington game, I think, you know, Carson was able to create on his own and escape the pocket and made some plays outside the pocket. So you can never predict when that's going to happen. And obviously Carson is really good once he does that, has had a ton of production in his career outside the pocket when he's being able to escape and make plays off schedule.
What have you made of Carson's accuracy lately?
I think Carson's completion percentage is up almost 10 percentage points over last year. So I know that was something that we set as a goal to improve upon. He's done a great job with that. I mean, that's almost unheard of at this level, to be able to increase your completion percentage like the way that he's done. And you're never going to complete them all, but obviously that's the goal.
On that option play on third and one, what's the risk-reward there? I know Doug said he thought the end was going to pinch down, but you're running an option to the short side of the field, or – it seems like a tough play to get off.
Well, not when you have the leverage that we think that we thought we were going to get, like Coach said. And, you know, I got to give Dallas credit. DeMarcus Lawrence made a really good play on it, and we got strung out and we didn't make it. So we had a good scheme in for the right reasons, a solid play, and it didn't work. If it was, you know, it was something that we didn't do a good job of studying, then that would be a different question. But the guy made a play. You know, we studied all their tendencies. We spent a lot of time doing it and thought we had a good call on.
Having a strong escort.
Scored on the option, I think, the week before.
Yeah. Especially against edge rushers that are aggressive, kind of using that against them before Von Miller last year. Was that kind of the game plan with DeMarcus?
Like Coach said, we were anticipating a certain stunt from the front, and it didn't play out that way. So you got to give Dallas credit.
12 and 11. And obviously, if you're playing 12, receivers got to come off the field. Do you envision at some point, though, Golden could play in 12?
Yeah, he can. Yeah, it doesn't mean we eliminate Golden completely when we get in 12 personnel. Yeah, he certainly could be in the game, depending on what we want to get done. Absolutely.
Carson Wentz, quarterback, that said, what are the areas that you still want to see him improve? Where are those that room for growth?
Yeah, that would be between Carson and the coaching staff, what we want to get done. I don't think we're going to discuss that in this forum, but you know, we all have things that we want to improve on collectively as a group. That's, you know, that's including myself and to a man in the locker room. So we all got to work to that point every day.
Can we talk about where you feel like he has improved in this season?
Yeah, we just talked about one of them and being his completion percentage. He's done a really good job with that, and you know, so sitting where we are, you know, there's a lot of things that we all need to get better at, and that's what we're in here trying to get done.
You obviously had a chance to work with DeFilippo. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I just heard that before I walked down here. So John's a really good friend, and obviously feel for him today. And unfortunately, that's part of this business, but he's a good friend, and I wish him all the best.
Mike, one place Carson has not improved at has been third down this year. His numbers are way down. I mean, is there just enough blame to go all around? I mean,
you know, Sunday we were bad on third down, and that wasn't just Carson. You know, when you go 1 for 9 on third down, it's never just one guy. It's a collection of issues, and we had those issues show up, and we're 1-for-1, and then 0-for-8 after that with the 1 fourth down conversion, which was a big one. We got the Sproles and put us in position to score. So we've got to do a better job on third down and sustaining our drives and, getting more points out and more production in the first half. Obviously, that was a big issue for us the other day, 17 plays in the first half, and simply not good enough, not when you're playing, a good team like Dallas. And we know that they're talented on defense and they present their challenges, but we expect more from ourselves there.
Sproles has been very effective when you've used him. How do you balance his snap count with how many injury with his injury history and his age, obviously?
Well, I don't think we're factoring any age into it, but certainly coming off the injury, Deuce manages that and does a really good job with the substitution pattern and keeping a close eye on those guys.
What stood out to you about Don Gurley during your time?
When you look at the Rams defense from an offensive coordinator standpoint, does it start with the front and Aaron Donald and Dominican Sue?
Yeah, what do you think? Yeah, they get your attention pretty quickly. Yeah, really talented up front and very disruptive, so worthy of all the praise that they've gotten.
What stood out to you about Doc and Gurley during your time there?
Both tremendous players. You could see the talent and the commitment that they have to the game. They love the game of football, and they've had really productive seasons. Todd having MVP type numbers, and Jared throwing the ball really well. So both those guys are playing at a high level.
Probably the only person that's ever worked with both these quarterbacks that were 1 and 2 in the draft. How do you see Goff v. Wentz, and where do they?
Well, I don't get a chance to see Jared a ton, but I mean, their team's having a really good year, so I know he's played well and played at a high level. That's I don't get to study him a ton during the season. Go back and certainly study a lot of people over the off season, but we love Carson Wentz here. I'm glad to be here with the Eagles in this organization, and Carson's going to be the quarterback of this team for a long time, and he's going to help his team win a lot of football games. So we just got to, collectively, we got to get back on track and do what we do best.
Josh had a pretty big run early in the game against the Cowboys, but there wasn't a lot of balance in this one, even though you guys weren't that far behind. Why do you think that was?
Well, I think part of it was we didn't have a good first half. I think 17 plays in the first half. And, one of those drives was a 2-minute drive. So they're all passes there. That might've been 4 or 5 of those plays, before the turnover. So, we didn't have a lot of opportunities, and that goes back to the third down question. We got to convert on third down, put ourselves in manageable third down situations to make. And then in the second half, we're getting a lot of production out of the passing game. Carson was 10 of 14 or something like that in the fourth quarter. 2 touchdown passes, so you can't ask for a better quarter than that from your quarterback, and 2 game time drives. So, again, we got to find that balance. But we got to start earlier, start faster, and we've talked about that a lot. And we know the issue is not just one thing, but when we do that and we start fast, and the game seems to go have a little bit more flow.
Along those lines, though, it just seems so. Like the fourth quarter, everything suddenly was working. You were getting the ball to Tate, to Goddard, to Jordan Matthews. Why was it so different from the previous 3 quarters? What changed to make things so much more achievable?
Yeah, I don't know that any one thing changed. It just, you just kind of find a rhythm. And once you get into a little bit of rhythm and the chains start moving, and I don't know, you get the defense on their heels a little bit, and they had us on our heels early, and we weren't able to get that reversed, and then we got a little bit of traction, and then we were able to play pretty effectively.
Mike, despite the Rams' front, I mean, they're giving up a lot of yards on the ground. I think they got the 3rd highest rushing average in the league. I mean, does that surprise you, and is that an area that you can exploit? And I mean, why are they giving up so much with that front?
Yeah, when I heard that, and obviously studying them, it was surprising to find that out, given who they have up front. So, we got to do it. We got to put a good plan together, and we got to give the backs creases to run in. We got to cover these guys out. We got to sustain our blocks. Do a great job blocking on the perimeter when we call the runs, and we got to stick with them. So,
Mike, with the lack of success the offense has had in general this year, there's going to be a lot of criticism, and a lot of that's going to fall on you as a coordinator, up to wondering about your job security. How do you handle that criticism?
I just come to work and, you know, I don't really get involved with any of that stuff. I'm just trying to put a great plan together and try to win one game this week.
Defenses and what gives them trouble when you do have two receiving tight ends that can catch the ball down the field? Do they match up with two safeties generally? I mean,
some teams will play a safety on one of them or a big nickel, if you will. Change up schematically rather than state based defense. You try to predict that as best you can based on how they might have played other people on tape and how that you feel like they might judge the skill level of those players.
On the sack fumble last week, was there anything Carson could have done in that spot, or was it a matter of just that's done on the left side of getting home?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just getting ready to release the ball, so it was just kind of one of those things.
Mike, have you guys done any studies on when you're running tempo and how that has and how those drives have resulted? In other words, have you found trends where tempo is equaling?
I don't have any numbers for you if that's the answer that you're looking for. I do know there's we had a lot of comfort level in that part of our offense, and when we are struggling, that's something that we can look to do and have looked to do. We've also done it to start games, so we have a comfort level operating at the line of scrimmage. I think the guys are confident in what we're doing there.
Mike, not a lot of offenses play prominent a 12 personnel look. Is there a downside to that? If I'm not suggesting you're going to do that at any time soon, but I mean, is there a downside to using 12 personnel, say 60% of your offensive play?
I think it's just week to week. You know, it depends on who you're playing and the way you think you match up, really. So there's not a downside, but I think it's week to week. I mean, sometimes you have better advantage in a different personnel group and than others. So that's what we're doing, trying to figure those things out.
Yep. Thank you, Mike.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seemed smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.